one is going to be against us, we still have another department to listen to. So, good morning, honorable members. Members from the department, police department. Before we start with our meeting, we normally introduce ourselves. My name is Teresa Ramodibe, the chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disability. I'm supposed to be joined by the chairperson from the Select Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disability as a joint committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Milton Lukan from the Eastern Cape. Morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Mundu Numalo, member of the committee. Thank you.
So good morning to Melanie Grace Tsege, the member of the portfolio committee. Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ibusen Sidia Dichetelo from Northwest, a member of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone from Gauteng province. My name is Belle Peterson Madonna. Thank you, member of the portfolio committee.
Morning, colleagues. My name is Connie Musimani. I'm member of portfolio committee from Gauteng.
Morning, everybody. I'm Yalinda Mula, member of this committee, West province.
Good morning, my name is Maria Solomon. I'm the committee secretary to the Select Committee on Women.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lorenzo Wakefield. I'm a researcher in children's rights at the Community Law Center at the University of Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Daphne Matthews, researcher to the Select Committee.
Good morning, I'm Kash Faisal, researcher to the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Crystal Levin, the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Gloria Jezela from the South African Police Service, Chair, Employment Equity.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Balim Mati, South African Police Service, Children and Vulnerable Group.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Susan Pinar from the Crime Prevention Unit of the Executive.
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Mzwandi Mzamane. I'm the head of Employee Health and Wellness in the police.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Kenneth Matenga from the SAPS Disability Management and the ESW.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Zuda Pere Judema Foko from Office of the Deputy Minister for Women, Children and People with Disabilities.
Good morning, I'm
Thank you very much for the invitations. I hope the team from the department is a team that will go back and be able to take decisions, because when we invite departments, we don't expect to be sent junior members who are still going to consult, because we demand answers when we are here. You might be aware that we had a public hearing. The committee and the select committee on persons with disability, women and children, had public hearings. with different stakeholders, NGOs, civil society. Now, it is from these public hearings where key issues emerged concerning various departments, and you are one of those departments. That is the reason we have called you today here, so that you can come and help us with those issues, especially with the implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. As I said, that you are all welcome, and we shall now proceed to give you the opportunity. But before I do that, I want to welcome my colleague and ask her to introduce herself.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Peace Mabe. I'm the select chairperson. I'm the chairperson for the Select Committee on Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. I'm from Gauteng Province.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We have already introduced ourselves without wasting any time, as you are aware that this morning we'll be getting a briefing from the Department of the South African Police and thereafter the Department of Social Development. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members, for giving us the opportunity to come and present the work that we're doing in the police in this particular regard. I would love to say up front that what we're going to present here is a work in progress. There are, of course, quite a number of areas where we think we ought, you know, to have to improve on, and that will be things that we are going to be doing. And we have taken note of what the Honorable Chairperson has said in terms of us taking seriously the issues that are coming from this House and going to implement. Myself, being the head of employee health and wellness, management of disability in the police generally is my responsibility. And I look internally in terms of our members, but my colleague, General Binar, who sits on my right, is responsible for, you know, vulnerable groups and basically dealing with the external. But what we have done up until now, we have not been working, you know, very nicely together. But that's something that we are going to be doing going forward and implementing the decisions that are coming from this House. The first part deals basically with an overview, you know, of the topics that we're going to be covering, which I'm not going to get into. I want to rush quickly to the background. Disability management in the police is within the component employee health and wellness, as I've said, and being my responsibility, and under the division personnel management. And this is something that we have done because our members, in terms of the work that they are doing, they stand a good chance of being, you know, injured and sustaining some disabilities. So, but also responding in terms of the Employment Equity Act, in terms of employing persons with disability. So we started this subsection in 2007 to ensure mainstreaming, you know, of persons with disability in the organization, focusing in terms of addressing, you know, issues of persons with disability. So my section is therefore the focal point in the organization when it comes, because the necessary expertise lies in that, and so we're playing a supportive role to the other, you know, divisions in the organization. Externally, the organization has also identified the need to ensure that services are accessible to communities with disabilities. In other words, people that are coming to receive, you know, services from us, that we need to respond to them in the same way as we're responding to other members, but accommodating them where need be. In 2011, the Division VISPOL created the subsection Vulnerable Groups, which is headed by General Pinar. This subsection is responsible to ensure that people with disability from the community receive accessible and efficient services from the organization. The organization also has a victim empowerment program that provides for all victims of crime, inclusive, of course, of persons with disabilities. Now, the next thing is our stakeholders, both internal and external. Those are the people that we work with internally in terms of different divisions, in terms of different components. If I can just start with human resource management, in fact, it's supposed to be human resource division, development, which is our training division in terms of training of persons, inclusive of persons with disability. Supply chain, whose responsibility is to make, you know, stations accessible to members of the public. The language management services, which deals with the question of sign language interpretation. Corporate communications that, you know, communicate all strategies that we have with regards to all, you know, our employees, inclusive of persons with disability. And then human resource utilization, where Colonel Jesley comes from, is responsible for ensuring that persons with disability are being affirmed in the organization, are brought into the organization, and basically in terms of the 2% that has been set, that we basically are striving to get to closer to it. And then TMS, that deals with the aspects of technology, you know, computers, making sure that people are basically provided for when it comes to that. And recruitment and staffing in terms of making sure that persons with disability are brought into the organization. And then we also, you know, are in discussion with organized labor at our wellness forum in terms of issues pertaining to issues or to persons with disability. Externally, we have the disability machinery with the Department, of course, of Women, Children, and People with Disability. We work with the Department of Public Service Administration, DPSA, DEFSA, the National Council for the Blind, and National Council for Persons with Physical Disabilities in South Africa. Those are the people that we are working so that they can also inform us how we can be able to improve, you know, checking if we're on the right track, so if we interface with them. In terms of legislative mandate, we are mandated in terms of our work by PEPUDA, Job Access Framework, Disability Management Policy, which is our own that we have developed, as well as our strategy covering the years 2010 to 2014. But I'm going to talk about this particular strategy towards the end, that it needs, you know, again, review and basically consolidation to deal with those, both internal and external, because for now it is only dealing with internal approach. Then we're also, you know, responding to the UN Convention, as you've mentioned, Honorable Chair, Constitution of our country, the Act, the SAPS Act, Children's Act, the Domestic Violence Act. And I'm not going to get into details of that, but if the Chair wants at a later stage for us to respond, we will do so. The application of legislative mandate, the SEPs must serve all victims of crime without discrimination on the basis of disability, race, gender, and religion. In other words, we are embracing everyone, irrespective of where a person comes from, who that person is, you know, what color or creed, religion, we basically and embrace everybody. Police station must ensure that services are available for the disabled or persons with disabilities and must work with stakeholders in this regard. So stations are being empowered to be able to work with everyone. Provision of the Domestic Violence Act applies equally to people with disabilities in the domestic relationship. More must be done to ensure awareness of the rights of victims, for example, application for protection orders. That those are areas that we still need to improve, but as you know that each and every station has got a domestic violence register where they are supposed to record all incidents of domestic violence that are reported, inclusive, of course, of persons with disability if they're coming. Specific programs are in place to ensure that police stations are accessible to the disabled person. Now, again, in terms of making them accessible, there are stations that are not accessible, but they are in terms of planning, in our plans, to make sure that they are. The activities, I deal now with the activities in progress. The South African National Police has the National Disability Strategy focusing on internal customers. As I've indicated and alluded, that it covers 2010 to 2014, and that we are in the process now of going to look at it. So the Disability Steering Committee is in the process of compiling a comprehensive disability strategy to focus on both internal and external customers. And I think that, yeah, there is a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of consultation so that people in the communities can tell us, you know, what is their experience when they are coming to stations and perhaps where do we need, you know, to put more emphasis. Then flowing out of that, a national directive will be compiled that will provide guidelines for implementation of the disability agenda in the organization. When providing services to victims of crime, SEPS is guided by the Victim Empowerment National Instruction and Manual, which are founded on the following principles: treating victims with respect and dignity, providing practical assistance, providing information and enabling victims to provide information on their case, providing protection of victims. So in other words, we basically have these principles that are applicable to everybody, inclusive, of course, of persons with disability. Special needs of victims are taken into account in the sense that physical access is provided through ramps at police stations. In some police stations, we even have evac chairs that have been placed so that people, if there is a need for people to go to the next floor where there are no lifts, elevators, they can be able to do so. But as I say, that is work in progress. The Disability Steering Committee is also carefully designing a strategy relating to the provision of sign language interpreters and services to people with hearing impairment. I think that here there is a challenge that we have faced in the past. We've trained some people, you know, in terms of sign language. But because, you know, when you do not use the skill, you lose it. And where we basically have been giving them the basic in terms of being able to communicate. But we realize that here, Madam Chair, we're still far. And therefore, we need to work very hard in terms of making sure that every member in our community service center is empowered to be able to deal with persons with disability when and if that need arises. But the challenge that we have, how to make sure that they keep that skill, we probably need to check on deploying them into organizations that deals with persons with disability so that they can be able to get the practice and be fluent in terms of using that skill. The Vulnerable Groups Subdirectorate is developing guidelines that will guide the policing of vulnerable groups. This process linked to the interdepartmental processes led by the Department of Women, Children, and People with Disability. Now I come to the budget. In terms of the budget, Madam Chair, the subsection disability management in the police has been allocated $4 million per year for the past 3 years. This budget is for internal use in terms of empowering commanders, you know, into how they deal with persons with disability, accommodating persons with disability, but also in terms of making sure that we're purchasing assistive devices that are given to members with disabilities, technological equipment such as your Zoom lens, your Dragon voices, your magnifier, screen magnifier, so that people are able to do their work, and also adaptation of station work stations for members in the organization. We've also gone further to acquire big button phones that can be utilized, you know, by persons with disability again. So we're using that money also in terms of awareness and sensitization in disability management. Other internal stakeholders utilize, Madam Chair, their operational budgets to cater for disability-related activities. For example, supply chain management in the police is using their capital budget in order to be able to make, you know, stations accessible. So it doesn't come out of this $4 million. They use their own. And so are other. In terms of the VSPOL, they use their operational budget to make sure that they create awareness in the communities around issues of disabilities. External services delivery is provided for in the operational budget, which does not make specific provision for specific groups of victims in terms of dealing with all victims of crime. Now I come to the UN Convention. And as I indicated, Madam Chair, in your letter that came to us, you're dealing with a number of articles that are coming from the Convention. But because there hasn't been enough synergy in the police, the response that you are getting there is coming from the internal, you know, response to persons with disability. There is a lack. We have not responded to the others. And I think that that's work that we'll need to go back and correct. So in terms of the internal, we have responded to Article 8 in terms of awareness raising. Disability awareness workshops for personnel, we have held about 527 workshops, you know, from 2008 to 2010. And we've covered roughly about 10,000 people in that period, which is, of course, a drop if you realize the number of people that we have in the police. So there is, again, work that needs to be done in terms of this particular work. Then that talks only to formal workshops that we're calling, but in terms of awareness, when you're talking about your casual day, you know, in terms of the IDDP, people are, you know, getting involved generally, and numbers do come where awareness, you know, is created. Disability sensitization workshops for senior managers, we've covered 10, in other words, one per each province and one at head office, which was covering roughly about, we've made provisions for about 25 people. But you will see the number is less because some people did not pitch up, but 196, you know, of what we thought we would have, 250 persons that would have attended. So that's the number that we were able to have. Again, that is work that still continues from our side. Then in terms of disability-related calendar events, 249 that have been covered, and covering about 17,571 members. And again, it talks to the issues that I talked about, casual day, the issue of IDDP being covered there. In terms of personal mobility, we've procured about 303 assistive devices, which has cost us quite a lot of money, if I can say, in terms of the money that we've been given, Madam Chair, like prosthesis, issues of zoom lens, and so forth, wheelchairs that have been covered. But in terms of that, in wheelchairs, sometimes a part of the cover that goes to persons with disability would be covered by the medical aid. Where the medical aid, you know, the shortfall, we would be able to cover in terms of making sure that people are able to work and be productive. The next thing, Honourable Chair and members of the committee, is Article 31, which basically just gives the reflection of the number of persons with disability that we had in the police during that period. And we're not anywhere closer to the 2%, but we're striving to get there, and we're going to be developing a strategy with the people from the recruitment and staffing environment. Just in conclusion, Madam Chair, we recognize that while legislation, policies, and instruction recognize the rights of people with disability, the practice may not adhere to the requirements. In other words, people at our stations may not be responding positively, may not be applying, may not be, you know, implementing those kind of policies and instructions that we put in front of them. But when this were to happen, we believe that members of the public have a right to lodge complaints as individuals and perhaps as groups if they need to, so that we are able to deal with those particular aspects. So what I'm implying, Madam Chair, is that it's not all well. There may well be areas where things are not happening as we want them to happen, but obviously we're open to that and to correct the situation where it is being raised with us. We recognize, SEPs, that there are still challenges to address, but we are committed to working with stakeholders to improve access to services and quality of services to people with disability. And I think that we've taken the right step, the initial step in terms of bringing all people that are working with disability management so that we can have speak from the one mouth. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your input. And I think it's quite important that when we talk about this, we actually say in terms of compliance, are we on track? As we all know that, you know, we know that South Africa is a signatory to these international treaties and to this convention. And yet, we see so little happening. When you look at you get a report that says we're in the process of doing this. We're developing guidelines. But when did we start doing that? Because we are talking about vulnerable people who cannot do things for themselves, who cannot fight for themselves. And yet we sit back and take our time, you know, in implementing to ensure that they are also accommodated. I just want to give my colleagues an opportunity to engage, but I think it will also be important for you to indicate when you keep on saying we have held a number of workshops, what was the impact, and then you did explain that you, although invited more, but only this number turned out. And this number of workshops that are being held, you know, it's not telling us anything. We have had 10 workshops, you know, on what and who was covered in these workshops. And you talk about the number of events held. What types of events? Where were these events held? And, you know, it's important for us to know the areas where these things are being done. And the article is going to talk about a total of 303 assistive devices. Where? Oh, well, I mean, we are talking about South Africa here. So we should be able to hear where were these, what, 9 provinces. And, yeah, let me give this to my colleagues then to engage. Honourable members, I will see by show of hands. Honorable Nomalo, Honorable Dichetele, and then Honorable Peterson, I'll come back. Honorable Mavi, Honorable Chairperson, why did you vacate to Susie? Okay. In that order, Honorable Connie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to know to the department that if I can go to the police station, I can just say Moroka police station, I'm deaf and dumb, and maybe I've been raped or I've been assaulted. I'll get any assistance because really there's a serious problem. We are talking about people with disability here, but they can't get any assistance in our police stations. Maybe I can see the policeman who's passing next to my house, and I stop the policeman and take me to the police station because we can't communicate. I'll get any assistance. I just want to hear about that. And second question, how does the department ensure that the person with disability are not discriminated against within the SAPS? What measures are in place in this regard? Thank you, Chair.
My first question or a comment is, let me just thank you for the presentation. But I picked up something when you started that you were not working nicely with Mrs. Pinner. Can we know why? Because I picked up something that you said you were not working nicely with Mrs. Pinner, and you would like to know the reason why, because that might retard the progress of the SAPS. That's my first question. And the other one is the annual application of legislative mandate. SAPS must serve all victims of crime without discrimination on the basis, as you have said in the two bullets. My question is, what are you doing as SAPS to make these two bullets not to repeat itself? Like, for instance, if a disabled person comes and you say you ensure that the services are available for the disabled, what are you doing to make it not to repeat? The other question is, can you mention few places or police stations fully equipped with the devices that you just mentioned, that you have some very expensive devices? Can we have a breakdown on that? And the last one is that I'd like to know from you is, you talked about positions, managers. Do you have any disabled senior manager or any disabled person in a senior position in SAPS, a senior position? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to thank the department for the presentation they just gave. I was also actually worried that the issue of Mrs. Pinar, which were we really supposed to hear about it, or it just came by mistake? We really need to be explained. I'm a bit worried about that too. And then my question here, how does the department ensure that the information it develops is produced in a manner that persons with disabilities can easily access, vis-a-vis internet, promotional pamphlets, etc.? How does the department give effect to Article 13? What is the budgetary allocation in this regard? I think I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a little bit concerned about the word from the presenter saying that some of the police stations are not automating, but whatever the proposal has been made by the department. My question is, if they are not implementing the programs which have been given to the from the department, what measures the department is taking from the for those who are not implementing those decisions? And secondly, under the application of legislative mandate, the presenter alleged that specific programs are in place to ensure that the police station are accessible to the disabled. I want to find out that those programs, the department, are they monitoring those programs? Are they taking into consideration? Thank you.
Thank you, Shina. My first question is on external stakeholders. You said you do meet with your external stakeholders on disabled persons. Do you meet once a quarter? Do you meet once a year? Can you perhaps just elaborate on how you go about meeting with these people to address issues relating to disabled persons? And then on the UN Convention, on your external side, did you as a department submit your report that you were supposed to submit to the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities as to allow them to complete the country report? And you spoke a lot on what you did and what you spent. I think somewhere you spoke on spending $4 million for 3 years. That is $12 million spent on getting your members equipped to work with disabled persons. What awareness campaigns did you indulge in to at least get disabled persons to know their rights, to know how to go about it, to secure their issues to your police stations? And then you said there are specific programs in place to ensure that police stations are accessible to the disabled persons. Can you elaborate and refer to specific police stations? Too specific, can you name them on your programs that are in place and accessible to disabled persons? Because I do oversight, and what I have seen is a bit different to what I hear. You know, we had public hearings, and I remember the Orange Farm issue, where people were actually saying that help from the police, and I'm just trying to get to my page now, is not that easy for them. They are still being marginalized, they are still poor, they are not being taken notice of, and once they're disabled, they are not allowed to put their complaints or being helped to put their complaints. Can you perhaps assist us, and do you have any issues surrounding in your police station that came up surrounding Orange Farm? Yeah, I'll stop there for a pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is, does the department collate disaggregated data with regard to the incidents of violence and abuse perpetrated against persons with disabilities? That's my first question. The second one, during the financial year 2009-2010, the number of employees with disabilities decreased. But later in 2010 to 2011, it has grown again. Can you share with us what was the reason for the decline of persons with disabilities in your department? Certainly, Chair, the department did indicate that they have not reached the 2% target for employing persons with disabilities. I just want to check whether there are measures in place, system in place, and what is the time frame. Because as we're speaking, majority of persons with disabilities are excluded from the formal economy, and they're complaining quite a lot. So do we have measures in place and the time frame? When do you intend reaching this target? Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think one is to register a total dissatisfaction with regard to the slow implementation of the policy. I think when the presenter presented did indicate that they do have challenges, and one in terms of implementing the policy, and also in monitoring and making sure that people with SSAPs, they do implement the policy, is as if they are not aware of the policy. And most of the members, as indicated, when they do their oversight, it becomes clear that there is total negligence or people just don't know about the policy. Honorable Chair, I want to propose that we send the department back, and maybe in no time they should come back and give us their strategy in making sure that how are they going to make sure that they take everyone on board in terms of this policy, because it seems as if it is only at a senior or management level, but the way it's supposed to be implemented, it's not operational, it's not functional. You go to police stations, there are so many challenges in terms of, you know, so, Chair, Honorable Chair, I want to suggest that maybe we do that, because having listened to the presentation, really there is nothing, and the presenter did confess that they still have challenges in terms of implementing. We want them to go back. There's no excuse. This policy was adopted by South Africa in 2007. How many years down the line? 5 years. So there's no excuse. Issues of disability cannot be treated as a by-the-way issue. We need to treat them with serious... Somebody's infringing my rights to speak now. Okay, you may speak, member. I'll come back.
Thank you, Chair. I share your sentiment. I really share your sentiment.
I haven't given you a platform.
Oh, I thought it's Chair Gray.
I haven't given you a platform. I'm in the chair, and not herself. Go on, Honourable Member.
We don't want to share it like this. Anyway, I share your sentiments, and it is. I wrote down here. Since 2007 to 2012, there is no definite issues that was driven by this Department for Disabled Persons. You know, they come with a national disability strategy focusing on internal customers. What about the strategy for external customers? They are the ones that need to be looked after. And then when they come back, can they tell us the process that they follow? When a disabled person is arrested and detained, can we have a process on what is being done, how you handle these people, who sees to them, do you have social workers that relate to them on their issues? Can you tell us more? Because this is a very vague presentation. You deal with it every day. We are only hearing you once in a while. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Before they respond, can I also pose a question as to, I
getting the social worker aspect is covered. But, you know, I think you also admitted that, you know, there is no synergy. And I'm worried if still there is that no synergy at, you know, this era, when we are actually in the going for the fourth term, we're in the fourth term. I'm very worried. As some of my colleagues are indicated to the various aspects of abuse, we have, you know, a large level of abuse, you know, in this country. And the devices that are available, can you also tell us the systems that are in place, you know, that actually assist, you know, abuse of persons with disability? And perhaps this one of relationships really links to synergy. What is your relationship with health? With health department? Yeah, what is your relationship? And the last one then will be... I think that one has been covered by sign language, because I wanted to know how are these, you know, persons with disabilities accommodated, especially, you know, in terms of effective participation, in indirect or direct participation in court. Support systems, that's what we want to know. If you can also speak to that. And the role of the social workers, and how many social workers do you people have? Thank you. I'll hand over to my co-chair to take over.
Thanks, Chair. Before I do that, Honourable Member, your hand was up. Is there something that you want to do?
Thank you, Chair. The presenter indicated here that devices have been procured to ensure reasonable accommodation. My problem is where the devices have been procured. Is it all the provinces or a specific police station? I'm saying this because I am not sure that the rural police station is accommodated here. So maybe when time goes on, can you please come and highlight it where, which those one have been procured and those who are not procured? Thank you very much.
Thank you, member. Can I switch off your mic? No, in fact, earlier on, let me try and put this into perspective. I was saying that you will give you an opportunity to respond to questions that you'll be able to respond to. But with regard to the implementation strategy, we'll give you time. You'll have to indicate to us at what time you need to come back and report to the committee as to how are you going to make sure that the synergy and the dissemination of information and people who are supposed to be implementing this policy are aware of the policy. And the disaggregation of data as well. We need that commitment from yourself as your response. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to respond. I will be assisted by my colleagues here in terms of responding to the question. And I think that we're accepting the spirit in which the questions are being raised and the discussion is taking place. And, Madam Chair, let me assure you that it would have been our concluding, you know, point that give us time to be able to go back. And I would have asked until the end, perhaps the second week in March next year, where we are going to be able, you know, to put together the necessary strategies and then come back to the House, you know, to report in terms of that. But I leave that, you will respond to it when we conclude. But I just wanted to say, in first and foremost, myself and General Pinar, we're not fighting. The only thing that I was talking about is that I am only responsible for employee health and wellness. And so my focus is to deal with people internally. Now, we have realized that there is a need for us to assist them in terms of being able, you know, to deal with the outside. And I will leave most of the question that deals with persons outside to her, because she is in that environment. I deal with the inside persons. And therefore, what we are saying is that we feel that we've got the expertise in our environment that we can lend a hand in terms of them responding to the needs of the persons that are coming from outside. Now, the question that was raised here was about the 10 sessions that we've had to empower managers. And I made the mention of the fact that we had allocated 25 seats per province, 9 provinces, and the 10th session was for members of management at head office, where we had requested that we want persons at the level of brigadier, colonel brigadier, and major generals to attend to these sessions, so that at least members that are at the top of the organization would be the first to know how to deal, you know, with persons with disability. And therefore, as I was saying, it's work in progress that we were going to be able to roll out the program. Now, the next question that honorable members you've raised is about the 303 devices that we have purchased. What we do each year, each province identifies needs in that particular province in terms of who in the province needs an assistive device, be it a person that is coming to join the organization or a person that has been allocated in the past but needs now a new one. They do that, and they put a business plan that gets allocated to sent to head office. Then head office, on the basis of the 4 million that we have, we then try, on the basis of what the business plan, to make an allocation to each province in terms of how they spend that money. So they will make an application to head office, which will consider, is it in the business plan, and therefore approve it, and they will go and purchase those things. It's not being used for people only in a particular province, but in all provinces. But I take the question that has been asked as to whether do those assistive devices go to persons in the most rural of our areas. That's a question, madam, that I say we need to go and check and be sure that indeed those people are also covered. Now, the issue that was raised was about how do we deal with people who are deaf and dumb, and I'll leave that to General Pinar to deal with, if you can come in.
Thank you, General. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just start by also just addressing the issue of our cooperation. I think we've, in the service, Brigadier Mnaki and I have been dealing for some time with services to victims, and we work quite extensively with everybody else in the police, from the detective services to the internal environment. But what we've come to realize is that when we deal specifically with people with disabilities, we have experts in the police that focus on our internal environment. So the issue that we've identified as a, let me say, an area that we realize we can do more is to use our internal expertise so that we also serve our external customers better. And I think that was just the synergy that the General referred to. In terms of our external service delivery, there's two aspects I want to highlight. One is that we have certain aspects that we need to address for everybody. So it doesn't matter whether it's Constable Pinar or Constable Ngati behind the community service center desk. When a victim comes in, whoever we are, we need to be able to serve that person correctly. And again, regardless of who that victim is, we need to be able to have that skills. So there's certain issues that we've addressed in police, let me say, policies, national instructions, and standing orders across the board. So those issues are not specific. It's not a policy for people with disabilities. It's a policy for dealing with victims. And every kind of victim is addressed in that. So we speak specifically when you deal with a child victim that's under a certain age, you must deal with certain things. When you deal with a disabled victim, you must deal with specific issues. And that's addressed in our policy for victim empowerment. So that's why we highlighted that aspect, that it doesn't deal specifically with victims with disabilities. It deals with victims in general. And we need every police officer to be able to adhere to that. What we've come to realize over the years, because we started working on that already in 1999-2000, and we realized that we need to make this enforceable, because we find too many police stations are not adhering to what our policy requires of them. And that's why we then issued it as a national instruction. And the reason why I'm emphasizing that is because a national instruction is enforceable. And if you don't adhere to a national instruction, we can charge someone with misconduct. So we've strengthened the requirements of the victim empowerment national instruction now so that we can take action if people don't deal correctly with victims, and that means with any kind of victim that they don't deal correctly. So if a victim who is, for instance, deaf and dumb comes into a CEC and we need to deal with them and we can't communicate with them, maybe the person behind the CEC desk don't know how to communicate, they should take that person to the victim support room. Most of the police stations, 950 of the police stations, currently have a dedicated room for victims. So they would take that person to that room, and there they would contact, and they have a referral list at every police station and in every victim support room, which has contact details of organizations that support victims and organizations that deal with victims with specific needs. It's a referral directly issued by social development, but it's also a local directory. For instance, if we use an example, if we have a school for the deaf, for instance, in a station area, that would be on their referral list, because we encourage police stations to look at their local area, what are the resources in their area, and include them on their referral list. So what they should do is they should take the victim to the victim support room, which is a private space. Usually there are volunteers deployed in that room that would make the person comfortable, and then they will call someone that can communicate with them to take a statement. Then they would also call a detective, and in the case of a rape case, usually that detective would be a detective from a family violence, child protection and sexual offences unit, an FCS unit, which has specialised training in dealing with rape cases and would work with the person, the resource person we've called to deal with the disabled, to communicate with the deaf and dumb person to take the statement and investigate the case. That is what should happen. I think what we've highlighted is we are aware that there are cases when, for whatever the reason might be, a police station don't adhere to what they should do. And there we need to be aware of it so that we can take action. So on the one hand, we're saying to the committee, but also to our stakeholders outside that we work with, please complain, because then we can act. But also we need to know about these things so that we can see, is our policies maybe not strong enough, is our instructions not strong enough, is our training inadequate? What can we do broader on an institutional level, and what do we need to do on an individual level? So is it an institutional problem or is it an individual problem? That was the one issue I wanted to address. Then in terms of the convention, there's a number of conventions that we've addressed and we've reported on. And basically, the difficult issue is that, as I said, our national instruction has started to make provision for people with disabilities. So it's not a national instruction for people with disabilities. It's for victim empowerment, it's for sexual offences, it's for domestic violence. It's for children in need of care and protection, but it makes provision for the child also with a child with a disability. Specifically, if we speak about the conventions, they usually ask us, what have you put in place? And then we will address that in the sense that our national instructions that require police to act in a certain way has specific measures in place for dealing, for instance, with children with disabilities. Vikram Nati, who's the expert on dealing with children and vulnerable groups, will speak in more detail about that. But I just want to speak, just make an introductory comment on the issue of the engagement with the stakeholders. Police are part of the interdepartmental structures that deal with persons with disabilities led by the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. So they lead that interdepartmental forum, if I can call it that, for people with disabilities. And we are part of that forum. So that is where our engagement with the external stakeholders start. And they have regular meetings where we engage with them. And when specific issues are then raised for the police, we then take it forward in our internal procedures. So we would, throughout the year, we would have specific engagement with at police station level, maybe at provincial level, maybe at national level on certain issues, and then we would engage directly with the stakeholders. But usually it happens through that intergovernmental forum that's been set up.
Thank you, Chair. If I could just fill in on the other areas that were not covered. If I could just start with our key stakeholder, which is Department of Women, Children, People with Disabilities. They've been able to assist us with advice. Take for example, they've provided us with a list of their service providers who would then be dealing with translating sign language, so that should we have that need, we would be able to make that available. Now, to come back to the issue of why we were looking at the second week of March
I think General Mzamane has already indicated, could we look at the second week of March? Because we would be then dealing with more specific details on the very complex issue regarding specifically disabled victims. We realize, for instance, that there are a number of strategic choices we'd have to take about the best way to deal with the sign language issue. As the House is aware, sign language has a dialect, there are different dialects in specific areas, and we would need to be, and you know, to be sure that we accommodate those very specific needs with regard to that specific area. So our process, currently we've been having the informal consultations with the other stakeholders. We are developing and drafting the guidelines to deal with the different areas of disability, and we would then have the formal consultative process with the other stakeholders only when we have a proper guidelines available to us. And it can only be in March, by the time when we would then, you know, feel confident enough that things are watertight enough to deal with those issues. As indicated, 2011.
Sorry, Chairperson. I just wanted to, before you go any further, this March business, what is it all about? Is it next year? What, can you explain it properly? We don't understand it.
The proposal made by General Mzamane was, could we come back the second week of March with a strategy that deals with services provided to victims with disability out there, the external aspect. I don't know if the Honourable Member.
I also don't understand why it's going to take this department another couple of months going into the sixth year of the UN Convention that they need to implement. I cannot understand why they only now that we've raised this issue that they're trying to accommodate disabled persons. Can they please explain why?
I think you can hear that the majority rose that says no to your request of March. March is too far, because March will be dealing with your budget vote, so it will be an old issue. Mm-hmm. So give us a reasonable request.
Madam Chair, I think that we are in the hands of the House, and if you want us to come back in 2 months, we'll then do so. But from my own view, I thought that it would give us enough time to be able to do the necessary consultation. But that is fine. I understand, you know, the urgency that has been expressed by the House. We will come back, Madam Chair, if
okay.
Agreed.
I think I'm still... Okay, sorry to mention. I think I'm still complaining, 2 months still. I think this department is not being taken seriously, Chair, to be very honest. We're supposed to tell these people to go. It's only that it's unfortunate that they had to present first. But I think the disability issue, I don't hear anything here. And we visit police stations. I think the Honourable spoke about Moroka police station. It's rotten. I don't want to lie. I've gone there also several times. And we've got children, by the way, who are disabled. We know what we're talking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think when I opened, I stated the reason why we are calling departments. We are also working within our time frames. And we are saying to the department, even if you don't come back, send us an information that will assist us when we compile our report. There are questions that have been thrown all over you, whereby you need information. The question of data, you know, aggregated data, segregated data. We can't wait for a straight plan. I don't think it's for us here. All we need is to respond adequately, you know, to the questions that have been sent to you so that they can really assist us in compiling our report. So we can't wait for March. If we could have that at the latest 2 months,
2 weeks. It's unfortunate because this policy was implemented in 2007. You understand? So it's 5 years down the line, and you still want us to give you 6 months to go and prepare a response on... It's unfortunate, you know. So as a matter of agency, because we also want to assist the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities to compile a report. We want them to report this year. They've never reported as well for the past 5 years, isn't it? So we want to assist them to report. And they will not report as long as other concerned departments are providing them with information. If they don't have that information, what are they going to report about? So please help us. Mama?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to put in the House also that in terms of monitoring, as I'm coming from employment equity, that I want the House to know that the inherent requirement of employing police within the department is that physical fitness. So we are focusing on lesser percentage. The 70% are personnel that's supposed to be physically and mentally fit. So I just want to put that on record so that we understand that when we are talking of this percentage, it focuses only on support. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, that is clear, we know. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I think that I want to get clarity from you, because when we were asking for, the time that we were asking was in terms of developing a comprehensive strategy. But in terms of the questions that are being asked, we can respond in two weeks, if that is the request of the House. I think that the issue, Madam Chair, that was asked also was for us to indicate some of the stations. Now, again, I indicated that the supply chain management, which is a stakeholder in terms of doing that, they've given us a report in terms of how many stations they have, dealt with, which are complying, and there are some that are in their planning. They've given us that, and they've given us by name the stations that they are. They say they are compliant. I can basically just take you through that, but I'm not necessarily going to say Morocco is compliant, because that's not my responsibility in the police. It's somebody else's responsibility. What I'm saying, I'm only 1 year in the environment where I'm working as a person that is working in this environment. So what we're trying to do is to bring all those, so that when there is a question that is being asked by this House, by the Parliament, we are in a position to respond from our office without running around into other departments. That's where I was talking about synergizing, bringing everyone, so that we talk from the same mouth. Now, there was a question that was asked about if we have any senior manager that has got a disability. I know of one person that has a disability, senior manager at a major general who's in the Eastern Cape. That's by far the only one that we have. I also need to mention the point that there are people in the police that have disabilities but sometimes do not want to declare. They don't want to come out, you know, to be regarded as a person with disability. That's another aspect with people that are in the police. The question that was asked about whether we have submitted a report on the UN Convention. There is a report, as I've said, covering the four articles that were highlighted on the slides. That was given and signed by the minister to come through to your department. The issue of Orange Farm, you answered it. Okay. I'm just trying to think what else. Now, there was a question about social workers. Now, in terms of the FCS, there are what they refer as forensic social workers that are working there, you know, and assisting in terms of cases that are going to court for, you know, persons that have been exposed to sexual offenses. But we also have, in my department, I'm in charge of about over 200 social workers that are you know, in different provinces, as well as there at head office, as well as psychologists that are working there in my department. Those are people that my social workers are people that are focusing on internal members. Forensics are focusing on the outside. They do not report to me. They report to detectives, which is where they are supposed to be reporting. And therefore, in terms of participation by my social workers, no, they do not participate at court. The only ones that go to court are the forensic social workers.
Okay, let's do this. I think members will agree with me that in terms of the comprehensive strategy as to how we're going to make sure that everybody's on board with this policy, we can give you that 6 months because it requires quite some time. But with regard to questions that were posed today, we give you 2 weeks to respond in writing because we don't want you to thumbsuck. We want information that is there. We want the correct information because, remember, part of the process is to also enrich the report. So we want accurate information. I think members will agree with me on that one. Because now if you're giving us and you're not sure about this one, you're not the person who can say this, so go research even on questions that you're not directly responsible to. But each and every question that has been posed to you today, go back and then in 2 weeks' time, please give us responses in writing. Is that in order, members? Because if we want him to respond now, we're not going to be satisfied with the report, I mean with the responses. But if you give him time to go back, do some research and consult with other managers within your unit, not necessarily where you are accountable to. There are questions that were raised that you're not accountable to. I think that is fair.
Thank you, Chair. I think that is quite fair. Because one other crucial question is that I spoke to say that, you know, we are just telling us what it is that you have done, but we don't actually know where is that happening. It might be happening in one province. So we are interested in that disaggregated data to see where does it happen in terms of the information that you gave us. That is it, honorable members. I think let me thank the department once more, and thank you, honorable members, and the meeting is adjourned.
Yes,
and take 3 minutes break, members, while still waiting for social development.
Thank you. No, it's all right.
Good day, everyone, honorable members, members from the Department of Social Development. Good morning to you, and you are all welcome. As we proceed with our second leg, can I just start by asking members to quickly introduce themselves? And you will also do the same. My name is Dorothea Mujibe, the chairperson for Portfolio Committee on Women, Children and Persons with Disability. And with my colleague.
Thank you very much, colleague. My name is Peace Mavi. I'm the select chairperson of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. I'm from Gauteng Province. You're all welcome.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Muntu Nomalo, member of the committee. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. My name is Grace Stoike, a member of the committee.
Morning. I'm Ipusen Sigea Dissetere, member of the committee.
Morning. My name is Pearl Peterson Matuna, a member of this committee from Southern Province. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Colonel, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Lorenzo Wakefield. I'm a researcher in children's rights at the Community Law Center at the University of the Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Tahni Matthews, researcher to the Select Committee.
Good morning, Crystal Levendel, researcher to the Portfolio Committee.
Morning, I'm Olly Brooke, I'm the director in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning. My name is Jackie Mbonani, Chief Director, Welfare Services at the National Office of Social Development.
Good morning. My name is Mankibi Mulangu. I'm the Director in the Program, Services for People with Disabilities.
Thank you. Welcome again. We all know the purpose of our meeting, which came up as a result of the public hearings that we had jointly with the Select Committee on Women, Children and People with Disability, where we were looking at the implementation on the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. During the discussion that we held with the stakeholders, the NGOs, the civil society that we invited, a lot of issues emerged from them. Some of the issues that concerns your department and other departments. And it is for them. This reason that we are meeting you this day so that you can be able to respond, you know, to some of the concerns that were raised by those vulnerable. Without wasting any time, let me then
I just want to ask, the document we're giving now, what is it all about? Is it an amended document or what's going on? And if it's amended, Chairperson, what time are we going to have to go through it again? Are we going to listen to them now, Chairperson? I think this is not serious again, Chairperson. I don't know.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. We don't have major amendments. Our challenge, Chair, was that as we were preparing the document, we also had to get some information on statistics from provinces, which some of the provinces delayed us. It's actually very minor changes and also adding of those statistics after we verified them, after receiving them from the provinces. It will be less than 1%, you know, amendments from the previous document.
Okay, thank you. My co-chair, can you take over?
All right. Well, then I'll give you an opportunity to present. I think you need also to mention that the amendments are basically on the background, not on the presentation itself, but on the background and the introduction. So we are okay with that. All right,
she knows that. Thank you, Honorable Chair. My colleague Mantip is going to do the presentation, but maybe before that, we would like to tender apologies for our Director General, Mr. Busima Donzela, who is currently out of the country, who was supposed to be with us today. An indication again of the Minister, who the minister and the deputy minister, they are held up in the briefing meeting following the ruling of the High Court regarding the big tender that the department has. I just wanted to raise those apologies. So we are responding exactly on what the Honourable Chair is doing, or the presentation is attempting to respond to it. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. My presentation is going to be based on the concerns that were raised during the public hearing. I'm going to be touching on the introduction to the whole program, give a bit of a background, and outline the funding, outline the programs and the funding thereof, and also touch on the disability mainstreaming program that the department is actually responsible for and gives the challenges and way forward. Honourable members, as I said, this is a presentation from social development on issues that were raised during the public hearing. And the presentation will be summing up similar issues and providing broad responses to the concerns raised. The presentation will, on the other hand, also provide information about the department programs for people with disabilities and their current status whilst in the process, provide information that will respond to the issues that have been raised. I'm not going to go broader onto the background, but the background actually stipulates that we as a department derive our mandate from the Constitution, and especially Section 27 of the Constitution provides for the right of access to appropriate social assistance to those unable to support themselves and their department. And also, members, honorable members, Section 28 of the Constitution sets out the rights of children with regard to appropriate care, basic nutrition, shelter, health care, and social services. Welfare services, on the other hand, population development and disaster management have also been identified in the Constitution as functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. Honourable members, the program is aligned and responds to the following government statistic outcomes, and I believe that we are all aware of the statistic outcomes of government. The program responds to the GSD's outcomes and improving quality of household life, and it strives for protection and promotion of the rights of people with disabilities. The target group of the department are the poor, marginalized, and vulnerable groups in society, of which persons with disabilities forms an integral part. Services are provided within three main developmental social services within the department. That is social securities, which is concerned with grants, social welfare services, and community development. The national department is tasked with development of policies, programs, legislation, and research, while service delivery takes place at provincial level. The program that is currently doing a presentation serves as disability focal in the entire department on disability issues. And in terms of institutional arrangement, the program is located as a directorate within the welfare services branch headed by a DDG, within the similar structure, and the similar structure is replicated at provincial level. Our legislative and policy framework within the department, firstly, we all subscribe to the Constitution. Following the ratification of the Convention, it is then part of our legislative framework, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We also look at the children's rights that actually impact on the presentation today. And over and above that, the department developed a wide range of policies and guidelines and strategies on disability relating to the specific services it provides to people with disabilities. And just to mention a few, We've got a policy which is an overarching policy on the provision of social services to people with disabilities. We also have community-based rehabilitation guidelines. There are guidelines on residential facilities. We've got guidelines on protective workshops. We've also developed an HR strategy on disability that looks at facilitating employment equity in the department. We've also developed strategy towards integrated services to children with disabilities. Honourable members, DSD aligns its policies, guidelines and strategies to the convention. The policy on social services to people with disabilities provides an overarching framework on the departmental approach to and its implementation on services to people with disabilities. The policy serves as a framework for any legislation that may be required to give effect to this policy. It also takes cognizance of the roles and responsibilities of various role players from all sectors of society, including national departments, in delivering mainstream social development services to people with disabilities. The monitoring and evaluation indicators that are in the policy serve to provide the data against which South Africa, and especially the department, can be measured in terms of whether it indeed is meeting the social development services needs of people with disabilities. Policies are implemented at provincial level in partnership with NGOs, community-based organizations, and disabled people's organizations. Funding and support to the organizations is also provided both at national and provincial level. The core programs rendered to people with disabilities program includes the following: services to children with disabilities, residential facilities and services for people with disabilities, protective workshops for people with disabilities, social rehabilitation services for people with disabilities, disability mainstreaming services that ensures integration of services within the DSD programs, within the departmental programs. And I just gave an example of those. Services to children, as you know, that the Children's Act integrates services to children also with disabilities. Families accommodate all families in South Africa, including families that are headed by disabled persons and families that include members with disabilities. Wide consultations with the broader disability sector, parent organizations and government officials in terms of national departments was ensured in the development of these policies, guidelines and strategies. And over and above that, training on all policies and guidelines and strategies was also facilitated with all relevant stakeholders, including people with disabilities. Zooming in deeper now into services that we provide, starting with services to children with disabilities. The department developed the strategy towards the integration of children with disabilities, which is aimed at guiding service provision to ensure inclusive programs. This strategy was developed to guide the implementation of the Children's Act in respect to children with disabilities. The strategy was widely consulted with stakeholders from national and provincial departments, as well as with other government, parent organizations, and the disability sector. It is inclusive of programs and services such as early childhood development, basic education, health, sports, and recreation and justice. Broader disability sector, inclusive of NGOs, parent organizations, and children with disabilities in the development, participated in the development of the following programs: inter and interdepartmental collaboration on advocacy for effective mainstreaming of children with disabilities in the implementation of the Children's Act, the National Policy Framework for Children, guidelines on norms and standards, implementation plan and costing model for child abuse, neglect, and exploitation, strategy on child-headed household, early childhood development, and partial care services. These are the documents that were developed to effect the implementation of the Children's Act. To ensure the development of a baseline to guide the implementation of the strategy, a situational analysis on children with disabilities, focusing on the provision of services, was conducted, initiated by Social Development, and this was done in partnership with UNICEF, Department of Education, Department of Health, and Department of Women, Children, and People with Disabilities. The research involved participation of national and provincial departments, organizations for people with disabilities, and organizations of people with disabilities, non-governmental organizations in workshops and focus, and the processes followed were through workshops and focus groups. Funding of children's services. I need to mention this, honorable members, that our service delivery, as I mentioned earlier on, and funding of those services happens mostly at provincial level. The slide that I'm going to present now indicates the amount that provinces fund for different services for children with disabilities, and I gave those services. It's stimulation and daycare centers that are run by NGOs or parent organizations for children with disabilities. Do I need to go through the amount? Okay, then can I just maybe just touch on them? Eastern Cape, 3.4 million. Limpopo, 847,000. Northwest, 2 million. Gauteng, services are provided for by Department of Health. I also need members to understand that, according to the Mental Health Act, Department of Health has a responsibility to render services to children with mild, moderate, profound mental disabilities. And the majority of our children with disabilities who are in facilities presents with mental disabilities. We have been instrumental in making sure that in 3 provinces out of the 9, Health Department assumes that responsibility, and that is in Gauteng, in Western Cape, and in KZN. So in terms of these provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN, there's no amount reflected because these services are funded for by the Department of Health. Mpumalanga, 2.6 million. Free State, 5.67 million. Northern Cape, 277,000. I also need members to understand that the amounts are mostly informed by the number of facilities that are in that province. Moving to the second service, residential facilities. The department supports 149 facilities spread across the country, with the majority located in urban settings of provinces. To guide service delivery in those facilities, the department developed policy guidelines, minimum norms and standards, and drafted protocol guidelines on how services should be provided. And on top of that, we audited facilities to determine the level of compliance with the departmental prescripts. Facilities implement a number of services depending on their beneficiaries, and most of the residential facilities have protective workshops. Protective workshops provide for psychosocial services or socio-economic programs where participants within residential facilities can then, during the day, get engaged in productive fashion in terms of work during the day, and they then go to residential facilities after that. Residential facilities of provincial department is involved in the program of residential facility staff and beneficiaries on all policies that have been conducted in all provinces. In a nutshell, all policies that we've developed, we've trained service providers, government officials, and we've also gone to an extent of training people with disabilities who are involved in that program so that they are aware of their rights in terms of residential facilities. What rights do they have to be in that facility, and what are they entitled to? We actually expect them to understand so that they could, in a process, then ensure that or request for those services. I need to go back a bit because one slide is not off. Oh, here it is. Sorry, it's not correctly placed. Sorry. These are the numbers of residential facilities that are spread across provinces. It shows the urban setting in terms of how many are there per province in the urban areas, peri-urban areas, and rural areas, and the total per province. As I said, there's 149 of them countrywide. Chairperson, do I need to go through the numbers? Are they visible in your presentation? They are visible. Thank you. The funding and support that we do, that we do through provinces, are also reflected there. Be aware that the majority of our facilities are in the Western Cape, are in Gauteng, and in the Eastern Cape, but the urban part of the Eastern Cape. Also in KZN, but the urban part of the Eastern Cape. And other predominantly rural provinces have got few facilities. I didn't ask about the amounts. They're visible. Can I continue? Social rehabilitation and social work services. That's another service that we provide. The rehabilitation centers offer the rehabilitation services to people with disabilities in order to decrease the impact of disability and promote independence and full participation in society. I'm sure we're all aware that if a person acquires a disability when he or she is already an adult, it involves changes in terms of employment, in terms of capabilities, and the people need retraining. That's part of what the rehabilitation centers provide. What are the services that have been provided in these services? The promotion of independence in personal care skills, in terms of how you care for yourself. Vocational rehabilitation, as I said, in terms of work, what is it that you can do apart from what you are doing. Recreational activities, family and carer training. Carer training is especially for those people with disabilities who would need a second person to help take care of them. The facilitation of general reintegration into society. The discrimination that is there countrywide, and also not only in South Africa, in terms of people with disabilities, requires the intense work in terms of ensuring that people with disabilities are reintegrated, and this is done through families and communities and other selected structures within communities. And social development, in terms of the program and other programs within social development, actually executes that. Assessment for prescription and or provision of mobility and other assistive devices. Wheelchair maintenance and repairs. Wheelchairs are our legs, and therefore we need to repair them time and again and maintain them. And this kind of services provides for that. Also on-site work and home assessment. When you're on a wheelchair, you're staying in a double storey. When you come from hospital, there need to be some more amendments to your house. And that's what the service also provides in terms of guidance. The number of rehabilitation facilities and social work services are actually in the presentation before you. Let me further explain in terms of why I keep on saying social work services. In most provinces, these services are called social work services because the NGOs mostly employ social workers and auxiliary social workers and people with disabilities themselves to render this kind of services. However, with the rehabilitation and the convention, social development then came to a realization that we are responsible for social rehabilitation services. Hence, with the development of social rehabilitation guidelines, which is going to be integrated with social work services that are rendered by NGOs. The funding that is provided by provinces is also before you. Let me further mention that the Western Cape province and the KZN province don't have stand-alone programs that look at rehabilitation, but integrate those programs within other programs. I'll give an example. When you've got a residential facility, you make sure that there's a social worker there who don't only render services for residential facilities, but also includes rehabilitation services. So the funding that is being provided also covers the rehabilitation, the same as KZN. Protective workshops. The department supports 293 protective workshops established to provide socio-economic activity-based production of goods which are done at a smaller scale. They are run and managed by NGOs. The activities offer a basis for the applied and practical therapeutic services for people with mental disabilities, intellectual and other disabilities. Let me explain this further. Most of the services that have been provided in protective workshops are linked to therapy that people with disabilities have to go through to ensure or to enhance their functioning capacity. Number of protective workshops in terms of spread in accordance with different provinces are actually then before you in terms of urban, peri-urban, and rural spread. The funding on protective workshops are also before you. I'm wondering whether I should actually call them out, or are they visible? Okay, in terms of Eastern Cape, it's 1.1 million for 14 protective workshops. Limpopo funds 33 million for 47 protective workshops. 3 million, sorry, for 47 protective workshops. Northwest funds 2.7 for 3 protective workshops. Gauteng funds 11 million for 65 protective workshops. Western Cape funds 7 million for 53 protective workshops. Mpumalanga funds 39 million. Oh Lord. What am I seeing? 19.7 for 44 protective workshops. Free State funds 1 million for 17 protective workshops. KZN funds 2.4 million for 41 workshops. And Northern Cape funds 277,000 for 4 protective workshops. Social Security, which is also part and parcel of programs that are rendered in the department. The program is not located within welfare services where the disability program is, but there's a branch, a dedicated branch that looks at social grants, social security grants for the department. It provides protection aimed at providing financial assistance in the form of grants to vulnerable people, including people with disabilities. The different grants provided are as follows. Disability grants, care dependency grant, old age grant, war veterans grant, foster care grant, grant in aid, and child support grant. And the amount in terms of grants and the number of recipients are in a slide before you. over and above the programs that I already mentioned, provinces and national also funds NGOs, community-based organizations, and charitable organizations. And the slide before you outlines or stipulates the amount that provinces fund for different NGOs, CBOs, and DPOs in the respective provinces. The issue of funding of NGOs in the department. Over the years, the department has had a number of interactions with the broader national and provincial NGO sector, which provided insight and understanding into the NGO environment and the challenges that they face. There has been a number of ministerial platforms that were held, which prompted the national NPO summit that was held on the 14th, from the 14th to the 17th of August, 2012. A number of concerns raised include the partnership between the department and the NGO sector, adequate funding for services that are being rendered by NGOs, service delivery in terms of the how part of it, whether it's responsive to the needs, and legislative framework, whether it covers all the concerns and the needs that NGOs had. I now come to the disability mainstreaming services that we provide as a department. Following the ratification of the UN Convention, the Department of Social Development then undertook the responsibility also to implement the UN Convention within the department. The directorate that is presenting today remains the disability focal point for the DSD, meaning that it is the program that drives the disability mainstreaming within the department in both national and provincial DSD. The program itself assigns different programs to managers to guide and work for development of policies, in the development of policies, norms and standards, strategies to ensure inclusive and responsive programs. And I gave an example. Within the HIV and AIDS program, we've got managers that are working with the HIV and AIDS program to ensure that all the programs and policies that have been developed become inclusive of issues of disability. And that doesn't only address the issue of policies, also in terms of implementation, we get involved to ensure that implementation of such programs cover people with disabilities also. Children, as I said earlier on, in terms of the Children's Act, children with disabilities are integrated or are included. Therefore, we as a unit are there to ensure that the implementation of the Children's Act also covers children with disabilities. The department, the following activities were undertaken following the ratification of the UN Convention by the department. The first one, we audited the departmental policies and programs to determine their alignment to the UN Convention. We have developed in the past years, and currently we're also developing policies, legislation, strategies, and all document prescriptions. We wanted to actually ensure that, find out the level of compliance to the UN Convention by the department. Therefore, we then initiated an audit on all policies. We started at national. Currently, we are busy with national to audit the policies and programs. We further conducted capacity building workshops for senior managers and middle managers in all DSD departments, meaning that it's national and all provinces, to introduce and to familiarize them with the obligations that are there in the UN Convention. We further facilitated the development of an HR strategy on disability and a disability mainstreaming toolkit to enhance the development of disability-related planning and inclusive programs within HR and also within the broader department programs. We went further because of the challenge that we had as a department to ensure that each and every official gets trained on the disability mainstreaming toolkit and the HR strategy on disability. We established partnership with a Japanese funder, JICA, Japan International Cooperative Agency, who in the process donated 10 wheelchair accessible minibuses to the DST. These 10 minibuses have been allocated to all provinces, one per province, to ensure that it enhances the participation of people with disabilities in the DSD program. Most, when we did a situation analysis on the implementation of disability mainstreamed programs in all nine provincial departments plus national, one of the reasons that was that actually came out was that due to lack of accessible transport, people with disabilities don't attend programs. And with the donation that we got from Japan, that was done to enhance the participation and the visibility of people with disabilities in all the DSD programs. We've also planned a training of officials, meaning that it's going to take managers, senior managers, middle managers, and up to assistant managers. We're also looking at decision makers and practitioners in the form of social workers and other related practitioners on disability-related planning, disability-related budgeting, and generic social work training. Honorable members, the planned training will start in January in the following year, 2013, and is going to be funded fully by JICA, the Japan funder. In my conclusion, these are some of the issues that we look at based on the submissions that were made during the public hearing. The department is actually working towards improvement of partnership and funding of NGOs following the NGO summit to respond, to ensure that the funding and the services that have been provided by the NGOs respond to the needs of the service recipients, in this case, people with disabilities. We're also working towards ensuring disability representation within the different social services professions to enable the department to respond to the 2% disability equity target and also integration of disabilities in DSD programs and also to complement the scarcity of social workers in the DSD program. If I may explain that further. When we talk about scarcity of social workers in the DSD programs, you know social work has been declared a scarce skill. Therefore, some of the programs that actually struggle and suffer because of that is services to people with disabilities. But due to the fact that the department have introduced different social services professions within the department, for example, youth and child care, child and youth care workers, we've got caregivers, we've got community care workers. Those are the other cadres that people with disabilities are being trained and introduced to enhance, firstly, the 2% employment equity of people with disabilities within the department to make sure that our programs can then respond to our policies and the needs out there of people with disabilities. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, we're working towards enhancing our partnership with key national departments so as to continuously improve service delivery of people with disabilities, especially that social development services are not the sole responsibility of social development alone, but other key departments also have got the responsibility to ensure that we collectively provide a comprehensive service to people with disabilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I nearly said, please take some water whilst you were making your presentation. But, Mr. Smith, let me thank you for your presentation, which was quite comprehensive and in one way responded to some of the issues that were erased by stakeholders that we invited at the public hearing. And I'm happy that you raised the questions of you know, social workers. Indeed, when it comes to social workers, there's a serious, serious shortage in each and area, in each and every area, not only in social development, but where we need social workers, they are not there. And as you also alluded to the fact that, you know, you are training youth, some of the youth also to assist in that regard. Sometimes, you know, we actually frustrate some of the people that we ask to volunteer by saying that they are caregivers. And consequently, in most cases, they don't even receive their stipend, and therefore discourage them in doing that. In this country, we really need an increased number of social workers if we are to deal with our social issues. Let me allow my, but before maybe I allow them, in your presentation, I was keen to know why especially in the rural areas, in KwaZulu-Natal in particular, why is the number of protective shops, I think it's slide number one, not number, but where you spoke about the number of protective shops and the breakdown, or it's page 30, yeah, as to why this number is so low in KZN and also in Northwest. Honorable members, it's an opportunity. Honorable Ngumalo, Honorable Zeke, Honorable Jitutele, Honorable Peterson, was your hand? Noted, okay. In that order?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation from the department. We hear that there are shortage of social workers, but those social workers who are there, you know, they can work with the community. You know, there are offices, constituency offices. There are lots of complaints regarding the social workers. I hear from your presentation you talk about this. Foster care, there's a very serious problem. I'm not even sure that if maybe somebody give somebody children for foster caring, there's any monitoring, because lots of people, there are lots of orphans, they're banks for other women. They are adopting these kids just to make money, because there is no monitoring from the social workers that I've adopted five kids. I've got five kids, I'm adopting five kids. And the social workers, they don't even check. I don't know, there's maybe a racket or what, but there's a very serious problem. Coming to foster care, let me make an example. My daughter passed on. Got these three kids, I don't even know the fathers. When I go to the social workers for the foster care of these kids, they'll tell me, go and look for the father of these three kids. And maybe as I'm talking to Africans, you know what is happening with our daughters. They'll tell me I must go and look for the father of these children before they give me that I can adopt. It will take years I can't even know who's the father of these kids. I just want to know about your awareness programs. That what are you doing? You've got any programs to go to our townships, go to rural areas, maybe to explain all these things that you are explaining to us today, to these poor mothers who've got these disabled children in our home. Because a lot of mothers, they're locking their children in the house that they must go and work. Somebody told me that there's a grant that if maybe I've got this disabled child, I'm looking after my disabled children, I must get something from the government, but they don't know that. That's why they're locking all these kids inside their houses. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, GST, for your informative presentation. I think I'll take an advantage too with regard to the issue that you have raised of social workers. Maybe because of the department this year, just to update us with regard to, because you have indicated that social work is a scarce skill. I agree with you, though I've got a very serious challenge that in Mpumalanga, we've got social workers who have graduated last year and who are not working as we're speaking. The department gave them the transfer letters because we gave them before the buzzeries. So now they've given them the transfer, the notice of release from that contract or contractual obligations. So how far are you in terms of addressing those matters of social workers in Mpumalanga? And secondly, maybe just to get or to elaborate more on your slide 13, with regard to the funding of the protective workshops. Just for an example, Northwest is having 8 protective workshops, but the funding, you are funding them 2 million, or the province is funding them 2 million. When you look at KZN, they've got 41, but the budget is still the same, 2 million again. So what is the criteria or the model that you are using to fund this protective workshop? Three, what is the status of the 2% disability equity target within your department, your GST? Have you reached the 2% target for employing people with disabilities? For sure, what are the measures? Do you have measures in place to ensure that persons with disabilities, especially those who are have visual impairments and blind, have access to material developed by the department? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Presenter. I'm a bit covered with some of the questions that have been put by honourable members. But on page 8, the funding of children services, I just want to get clarity for the 3 provinces that have been services provider for the Department of Health. Do those provinces, do they choose to go to get the services from Department of Health, or is your department who is allocating them to go to Department of Health? And or if it's not that, what criteria are you using to choose the 3 provinces to go and get the provider, service provider for Department of Health? The other one that I would like to ask again is the same question, but it's at page 12 of the service integrated. You mentioned 2 provinces, and why those 2 provinces? The funding support, you know, funding support. Let's say, for instance, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. In page 12, I think the above slide, where you say the services integrated within the DSD program, there are 2 provinces. Why those 2 provinces? Because
question of Northwest and KZN have been covered. And I want to find out from you. You generalize when saying disability. Can you be as Department of Social Services? How are you doing with the blind and the deaf? I know that they're also disabled, but do you have, like, for instance, do they have necessary priorities or the things that they would need as blind? Hola. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to thank the department for the presentation they just gave. You spoke about the funding support in the rural areas, which is less. I just want to know why, especially the rural areas. Can you please elaborate on that one? How does the department ensure that the information it develops is produced in a manner that persons with disabilities can easily access? And then thirdly, what has the department done to facilitate the development of support groups for persons with disabilities and parents, caregivers of children with disabilities? Then the last one, what mechanisms are in place in terms to ensure that persons with disabilities are not discriminated against when applying for social security benefits? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'll take the first two questions that were raised regarding social workers. Yes, Honorable Member, there is still a lot of cry out there in terms of social workers providing their services there. The department is also working with the council to actually try and identify what causes those complaints and issues like that. But I think the member will also agree with me that these are the same complaints that we get from even other professions, which the department in its campaigns plead to communities to report such instances. We've got measures in place as a department working together with the Council for Social Workers to deal with those social workers, because I'm sure members will also agree with us that it's not all social workers, only as specific social workers or a group of social workers. So it will assist us much as a department to continue to report such cases. We are aware, and we're not condoning that, that in some instances you find high case loads, you know, also contribute to a level of stress, and you know, but we are aware that there are social workers who are actually not doing what they are expected to do. So we would appeal that as honorable members maybe go out there, I'm sure, in the awareness campaign that we're involved in, we do have the number, the total number in the department to report such cases, so that at least we can deal with them in that fashion. Coming to the issue of foster care and adoption, as it was indicated, the department, because of the shortage of social workers, again, other technical issues, we do have a backlog in terms of the foster care, which the department is currently addressing together with our agency, SASA, where they have developed a system to actually fast-track and monitor those member, is the monitoring part of that. There is a minimum, a maximum number of children that a parent can foster. That is in terms of the legislation. It's quite true that the social worker, yes, needs to go and do investigation, look at the circumstances, make a recommendation to the court. So those reports are actually also looked at by the court, taking into consideration the circumstances that have been raised in the report, and the court is the one that actually approves in many instances. But the member is quite correct. I think social workers also have a responsibility. But in some instances, you find that, and in many instances, you find that these children are actually staying within the, with their grandparents. I'm talking maybe of a young grandparent who also has five children who are maybe below the age of 18, and you have also children of some of the older siblings who has been staying with them. So the issue in such circumstances is that these children will be best, I mean, it will be in the interest of the grandmother that they be placed with the grandmother rather than being removed to another person. So we do have such instances, but we will definitely take note of that and really look into that. The member is quite correct. I think it doesn't make sense when you have a lot of children and then you still take more children, because that is about the issue of the welfare of those children. We don't have a lot of adoption cases. We still are pleading as a department for members or for the community, members of the public, to come forward to actually adopt children. But adoption, there is no grant that is being paid. Maybe that's one of the reasons why maybe people are not coming forward with regard to that. But with foster care, as the honorable member has indicated, yes, it's quite true. It's being looked into as an income, unfortunately so. So the state is carrying a lot of burden with regard to that particular issue. So we're still pleading with the communities, but I think at the same time we know the conditions that our communities are faced with. When they are unemployed, maybe again to take another mouth to feed. So that's the reason why we also having an increase in the number of foster care cases, because you could imagine one child is around 700 and something. If you have four children that you're fostering, you times it by four. The issue regarding social workers who tell our clients to go and look for children unacceptable. There are measures in place that the department has put in place to ensure that the children do not suffer while those investigations are being done. So that message is out in all our offices. So it's another area which we keep on mentioning that it should be brought to the attention of the department, because social workers are actually moving out of their way. Are doing something that is wrong by sending out people to go and look for the fathers of those children. Because if you don't find them, like in many instances, they don't even know where they are. It means the child will suffer. So the department is looking in the interest of the child. So that's the reason why we've got measures put in place. So we'd like to have those instances. But again, trying to address that issue of the department, we faced here, honorable members, with a young group of social workers who still need guidance and stuff like that, unlike the old social workers who maybe when they graduated, they were at an advanced, you know, age. Although we're not putting that as an excuse, the department has put in place, the minister has introduced the issue of recruiting social work veterans, those who have retired, who are still in a position to sort of mentor these social workers and guide them. Again, because of shortage of social workers, we facing a very serious challenge in terms of supervision, because some of them, we have instances where they working under without proper supervision. So the minister has started a program which she's going to launch next month, where she's calling back all the retired social workers. We have been to all the provinces to launch those forums. So the national forum will be launched. I'm sure that will go a long way to actually supervise and mentor the social workers. So those are some of the programs that have been put in place for that. I think there's an issue of the grant that the honourable member mentioned, which one should be going to touch on that. Yes, there is a grant with regard to that. Going to the second question on the unabsorbed social workers. Yes, the department since 2007 introduced the scholarship program where we're training social workers with an aim of addressing the scarcity of social workers. Since 2007 until last year, 2011, we have managed to train around 3,500 social workers. We're currently funding 5,600 plus social workers at various institutions throughout the country who are at level 1, 2, 3, and 4. It was unfortunate that those students that we have trained since 2010, we have managed to absorb them into employment. Only those students who graduated last year where provinces could not absorb them. So plus minus 3,000 students were trained and absorbed. We're talking of 900 and something that was trained last year. I don't have the, please don't tie me down on the exact figures. We can supply those figures if need be. Who could not be absorbed. The issue is the national department is making funding available to train those social workers. The provincial departments make arrangements to absorb them after completion. So that was in their play. But last year there were changes in terms of their budget. They experienced budget cuts, all the provinces. And when they reprioritize, this is one area where they had to cut down money from, and as a result, we could not absorb those students. I'm sure honorable members would know it's mostly on the prerogative of the provinces when they reprioritize to fund other equally important services. They would make those decisions. But we, as a national department, we have met with National Treasury to try and secure funding to assist provinces. We have reached a stage where it has been agreed that there is a need. We can't, as government or as department, indicate that we've got shortage of social workers, and that was also indicated in the planning document of government, and then at the same time train them and not absorb them. So arrangements are at an advanced stage. We are definitely going to absorb them before the end of this financial year. It's just unfortunate because our provinces have to readjust. Try and Treasury with the presentation that you made last month, have agreed to seriously look into that issue. So we'll be communicating in province. It's not all provinces that could not absorb them. There are provinces which made arrangements to absorb them, like, for instance, KZN, Western Cape, Free State, Free State and Northern Cape. So that's the situation currently. Thanks.
To respond to further questions, the first question is in terms of rural areas, spread of protective workshops, especially in KZN and Northwest, why the amounts are almost the same, why the numbers of protective workshops are not the same, and why there are no protective workshops in rural areas in most provinces. The department has developed a funding model for all programs, the welfare services. We've developed funding models for all the funding, or all the programs, and that will actually assist us in terms of setting baselines in provinces, where provinces can actually start at a baseline to fund. But I would also like to make members aware that protective workshops house different disabilities, and the needs of people with disabilities differ. If you accommodate, for example, blind people, you will need gadgets that will make sure that the work that they do, the information that you provide, they can actually be able to actually access. And that actually escalates the cost. Also, when you have people with mental disabilities, they will definitely require caregivers who would actually assist them, even professionals who, in majority of cases and protective workshops, they use programs as therapeutic programs to enhance the functioning capabilities of the participants in protective workshops. And that in itself also escalates the cost. However, I would like members to understand that while the department is still working on a baseline and a funding model, we haven't implemented the funding model as yet. The fact that provinces are autonomous, they fund according to the budget that they acquire. They distribute it to facilities and programs, especially with disability. They are informed by how much they got to be able to respond to the needs that are there in the provinces. And as the previous speaker, my chief director, spoke, that provinces have experienced budget cuts, it remains very much unfortunate that the people who suffer are the NGOs. And that also informs how much is distributed to organizations. Coming to the point why there are no facilities in urban areas or in rural areas. Most facilities depend, especially protective workshops, depend on production which they can sell. They produce, and in most cases, they then transport or actually supply companies or businesses in urban areas. However, in rural areas, there is that scarcity of competition. They are not able to supply, to identify companies that they can supply, and it also becomes very costly to transport their production to rural areas, especially in provinces, for example, Eastern Cape. If you think about the urban parts of Eastern Cape having to transport their goods to urban areas, then it actually poses a challenge for them to get those products to urban areas. What is it that we did as social development to try and address this need? People with disabilities themselves, especially where there's no such facilities and services,
transformed themselves into organizations. That's why I always keep on referring to DPOs. These are disabled people's organizations that are started and are run by disabled people themselves. Yes, they have been established to try and support each other, speak in one voice, and see what it is they can actually do to try and develop themselves. And provinces have gone to an extent of actually funding and supporting this organization. And most of the organizations, while some focus on production or economic ventures, they look at, majority of them look at human rights, self-development in the form of skills and training. So it doesn't necessarily mean that where there's no productive workshop in rural areas, there's nothing that exists. Yes, we haven't actually reached that status where we would like to see equal representation and where people with disabilities can actually participate in all programs. But there is DPOs that have been established and are funded by social development in those provincial areas. And it's the same as residential facilities, that most residential facilities are in urban areas. And I'm sure honorable members are aware that majority of, or rather let me put it that way, 99% of our residential facilities are run by whites. NGOs run by whites. And we're still sitting with the challenge of our African people being able to run such facilities, whilst on the same breath, we're making inroads in terms of supporting those NGOs that are black-led, that are venturing into these facilities, and we are encouraging that, mobilizing them to ensure that, especially within the children with disabilities, you find that you've got organizations that have been running an informal organization for children with disabilities, not being funded, but thriving through requesting donations and all that. Those are organizations that we're mobilizing. We are assisting them to comply with their prescripts and ultimately funding them. And this is one of the processes and that we try to make sure that even our African people, especially those in rural areas, can benefit and can provide adequate services in accordance with our prescripts to people with disabilities, including children with disabilities. The question on awareness programs, what kind of awareness programs do we run, especially in rural areas? Let me say that broadly looking at the programs that the department runs, the invisos, taking services to the communities, that's what we run, and we ensure representation of people with disabilities in those outreach programs. However, the program has got awareness programs that we run. And this is in accordance with Article 19 in the UN Convention. We actually are aware and we respond to that article that there is no way that you can actually get service providers, especially in government, to understand disability when you don't raise awareness. Disability is an evolving issue and it changes every day. So for you to understand that a person who's deaf cannot actually benefit from the same services that you provide for a person who is quadriplegic, you need awareness raising. So that is continuously provided. Provinces, including national, provides funding for awareness raising, which is done predominantly with people with disabilities, because nobody can tell me how to live to be in a wheelchair. I've got an experience thereof. So you cannot speak on my behalf. That's the attitude that we actually adopt, that people with disabilities themselves can actually raise their own issues. What we do is we provide support as a department, nationally and provincially, and also going down to local, where issues are being, programs are being implemented, to ensure that services are being raised. And also to talk about social security. Social security has developed a number of tools to make people aware in terms of how to access grants, what grants are for, who qualifies and who doesn't qualify. And there has been a number of awareness programs that they run in communities, different provinces, on those issues to make sure that people with disabilities are not only told about services, but they can also access those services. Yes, it still remains a challenge, especially in terms of accessible programs. When you talk about whether blind people can be able to access, it means engaging Council for the Blind, for example, to make sure that they then can actually assist us in terms of understanding what are the issues that we need to put in place. As we're presenting social development, yes, I'm actually answering like three questions in one. Have, in terms of its employment equity, reached the 2%. We are now at 3% employment equity of people with disabilities in the department. But that is only the national department. Provincial department, we're still calculating and looking at how far we are and working with AWCETA to try and support and help the department to reach the 2% that has been stipulated. The program that has been introduced is the internship programs at provincial level to ensure that people with disabilities can also participate in skills development with the ultimate intention of getting some of them employed within the department. The challenge that we might be having is providing reasonable accommodation and appropriate services for people with disabilities. Reasonable accommodation becomes reasonable to different individuals. We need to actually unpack the issue of reasonable accommodation, and that's where we are working together, working with the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities to actually look at reasonable accommodation, unpack it so that it is not looked at as undue hardship to the employer, and ultimately come with a funding model for that, so that when you employ persons with disabilities, you might then know how much is required to make sure that they are reasonably accommodated. In terms of ensuring that people with disabilities, especially visual, according to the question, visual and blind, visual and deaf, are accommodated within the department. I'm going to talk about employment and I'm going to talk about programs. In terms of employment, in terms of employment equity, we've got 5 people with disabilities that have got a visual disability. And visual in terms of partially sighted and blind, totally blind. And those that are visually impaired have been provided what we call JAWS. This is a software that actually is voice synthesized and can read what is on the screen. When you open a screen, it reads out what comes up on the screen, therefore enabling you to read and understand what is on the screen. When you press whatever on your keyboard, it reads out the alphabet that you've pressed or the number that you've pressed or any button that you've pressed. It reads out, allowing you to understand the gadgets that you're using. That's how far the department has gone, and that has been implemented both in national and provincial. In terms of deaf people, we unfortunately don't have a deaf person who's employed. I see you're pointing. I thought you were asking something.
Chip in once you're still explaining.
Come again?
Can I chip in once?
Chip in, okay.
You talk about the provincial and the national. So is it only internal, or does it go down to the people who are blind, let's say ordinary people working in the rural, or
is it only in the, let's say, national offices or the regional
reasonable accommodation according to the convention can be implemented in 2 ways. You look at it inwardly in terms of your employees, those that need to be reasonably accommodated. Then you accommodate them. And what I've been explaining is in terms of inward, in terms of people that we've employed. So we've got social workers who are blind at provincial level and how they are accommodated. But also outward looking is to ensure that when you fund organizations, you make sure that you can also fund them to be able to provide reasonable accommodation in terms of their service provision. This is how at the department we look at reasonable accommodation. But what I've just been explaining is in terms of inward looking. But going further, as I said, that we, in terms of employment, we don't have any deaf person. We address the issue of deafness outside, in terms of when we've got consultations, when we've got meetings, when we've got in-business outreach programs, we always make sure that we've got sign language interpreters and tactile interpreters available to make sure that they can actually access the information that the department is providing to this community. That's in terms of awareness raising. I think I also responded to the funding model in terms of programs. How do we reach a criteria in terms of how much provinces should fund their facility? I also responded to that. The status of employment equity in the department, I also responded to that. And then measures in place for the visually and the impaired and the deaf, I also responded to that. And the question in terms of how did the Department of Health come to fund the services for children in Gauteng, in Western Cape, and in KZN? I earlier on spoke about the provision of social services, that it is not the sole responsibility of social development. Department of Health developed Mental Health Act. I'm sorry, I don't know the numbers and issues. And that act stipulates that the Department of Education, the Department of Health, and Department of Social Services jointly provide a service to people who have a mental disability or who have a psychiatric disability. And there are responsibilities that have been assigned in that act. And one of the responsibilities is that for children who've got profound mental disabilities, Department of Health remains the key respondent, especially in a sense that majority of them receive medical care, needs and receives medical care in terms of pills, in terms of whatever. So it remains the responsibility of Department of Health to do that. However, there has not been, in terms of responsibilities, provinces haven't actually been in a position to outline who is responsible and who is not. Especially as you know that with the past regime, disability remained the responsibility of social development. Everybody was put, as long as you are in a facility, you go to social development. And those facilities still remain in social development. But what we are as social development doing, we are in a process of developing MOUs. The discussion is at an advanced stage. We're developing MOUs with Department of Health for them to be able to understand and interpret Mental Health Act so that people who need to benefit from that might actually rightfully so benefit, and in this case, children. So in terms of the Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN, we have been instrumental in ensuring that these three departments are able to relocate the responsibility of those children to the Department of Health. And we are not tiring out to say that with other departments, we need to, other provinces are not doing that. We are still doing that. And as is now, the department that is actually moving closer to that, because they've agreed to taking over, is Limpopo. And we're looking at ultimately getting all provinces taking over, or actually moving the responsibility to the Department of Health, so that people, children with disabilities can actually get rightful services from the department. In terms of social rehabilitation services, when we look at Gauteng and KZN, we've been having an understanding that rehabilitation belongs to health. And I'm going to give you an example. when you are in need of a wheelchair, you come from a community, you come from a deep rural, they tell you go to a social worker. The social worker will then say, okay, fine, here's my colleague from health who will assess you and tell you whether you need a wheelchair or whatever. You go to a Department of Health. Department of Health, then the colleague will then tell you, you need 5,000 rand to buy this wheelchair. And you come and say, I'm not working. Then they send you back to a social worker to say, assess and give a social report in terms of the conditions, social conditions of the client. And in that process, it means social workers are involved in rehabilitation. And that's part of social rehabilitation. When you're discharged from hospital and you've acquired a disability, for example, you're now in a wheelchair, you can deal with the situation. Social workers always come in to bring in terms of counseling. They then have also to counsel and also sit with your family. That's part of rehabilitation. So in a nutshell, why the issue of social rehabilitation, we are saying social development plays also a key role in ensuring that rehabilitation can be comprehensively provided. Hence the development of social rehabilitation guidelines by the department. In the past, those services were called social work services. And that's what social development has been funded. And why in some provinces are they integrated in some of the programs is because they were not looked at as a standalone program, but they were looked at as where people with disabilities are, social workers can sit there and also provide that service. When people come and look for social workers, they can go to that facility. But when they found, like for example in Gauteng, when they found rehabilitation or residential facilities where social workers are, they fund comprehensively. So the funding for rehabilitation is integrated in that funding for a residential facility. It's not that they are not providing rehabilitation services, and it's not that we as the national government, you can say, separate it, but we say it's integrated within a broader service to people with disabilities. How do we cater for other disabilities? I think I touched on a number of issues. But what happened is that the challenge that we're facing, and not only social development, is that we've got 15 different categories of disabilities. And our policies, when we develop them, we strive to make sure that they can cater, or they can fairly cater for the needs of those disabilities. And how do we do that? We do that through extensive consultations. And as a result, development of our policies end up taking some time because we need to consult with different structures, making sure that what is in the policy doesn't respond to one disability and not to the other. So those are some of the things that we do. Also, when we run workshops, when we run meetings, when we run consultations, we ensure that the needs of people with disabilities who are attending those consultations, either be visual, either be sensory. Sensory is deaf, you can talk, you can see, that sensory are catered for. But over and above that, we also provide for caregivers. If you come, if they send you to a meeting, you are a quadriplegic, you can use your hands. When you go to the bathroom, you probably will need somebody. When you eat, you need somebody. So we always make sure that in such meetings, in such workshops, we also cater. We actually identify caregivers who are trained and pay them for that duration to make sure that people who come to meetings can actually be catered for and participate fairly and comprehensively if need be. That is the main reason why most of our workshops, most of our engagement with the sector is costly. But if we look at the needs and we accommodate them from the beginning, you won't feel it. And it doesn't only end there. We strive to integrate people with disabilities also in a number of consultations, in all consultations that happen in the department. And when we do that, we also ensure that the very same support that I spoke about can also be provided to people with disabilities in the same manner that we do or we strive to provide as a youth. The Social Security also provides what you call grant in aid. The grant in aid is given to others with disabilities who need support, 24-hour support. If you are a quadriplegic, you need a caregiver. Or in the right term, in terms of disability, we call them personal attendants because they attend to me as a person. Social Security then provides an addition to your grant to make sure that you can use that amount of money to actually get added assistance or pay for whatever assistance you might need at the time. So it actually adds on to the support that the department comprehensively provides to people with disabilities. We are aware that that needs to be heightened in terms of providing more funds to those people, especially that some people with disabilities need 24-hour care. A person who's paralyzed from the neck down, for every hour during the night, we need to go and tend that person. It means then that as a caregiver or as a personal attendant, you are employed in 4 hours. I think there was a question on access to information. How do we ensure that there's access to information? That will be mostly to deaf people and blind people. I think I responded to that, but maybe in addition to also say we make use of facilities that have been established, NGOs that are there, like, for example, Council for the Blind. All our policies in terms of the program and the department, we actually make sure that they are documented or they are developed into place. And as I said, there's a sign language interpreter when we present the policy. Yeah, and then how do we support our programs that are there to support groups, parent organizations and support groups outside? I mentioned the issue of DPOs that have been established by disabled persons themselves. That also includes support groups, because most of the time, those disabled people's organizations don't only serve as organizations for employment or other, but they act as support groups for people with disabilities. And apart from that, a number of provinces, majority of provinces actually, have then gone to an extent of establishing support groups for disabilities that actually need more intense work. If I can maybe mention an example, autism, mental disabilities, we work together with Department of Health and other departments to actually to run those support groups and make sure that people can actually get information and understand what disability is all about and how they can actually cater for disability. Funding of organizations. We have caregivers. There was a question on caregivers. Who are not fund paid. The challenge that most facilities have in terms of disability, which is brought about by the level of services that need to be provided in those facilities, stipulates or rather end up having or finding facilities having to get caregivers to actually look at that. But through our EPWP program, we've been able to make sure that the caregivers are trained. Not all of them are trained, but we are in a process. We're working with provinces to make sure that they're trained. And they're actually given stipends. Because if EPWP gives the stipends, provides money for stipends for provinces, they also then stipulate that the people should be trained. So we're working hand in hand with EPWP to make sure that they are trained and they can then get stipends for the work that they provide. Thank you.
I think I've tried to respond to all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that was a mouthful, you know, response. Although we can never say that we, you know, we have exhausted all what we wanted to do, because we are sitting here with a department that is responsible, you know, solely for vulnerable, you know, people. I just wanted to ask this, you know, when a person is receiving a disability grant, and then that person at the younger age, and then that person gets to qualify for pension, if you can just, you know, enlighten me on that, and then also the, you know, tell me the difference between these ECDs, those that are under education and those that are under social development, and why?
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of the disability grant, there is a permanent disability grant that people receive. All what that person will do will only go annually to check whether he or she is still alive, but not to go for a doctor to update her or his disability. When that person reaches age 60, then it automatically converts to an old age pension. Then the person. Then the children who are below age 18, because they would not qualify for a disability grant, but a care dependency grant, same as the one that Mantipi explained, the grant is aid for assistance. The care dependency grant would be for the profoundly disabled children who need 24-hour care. So the parent can apply for that type of grant to assist in the same way as to actually make sure that the parent can maybe get someone to look after the child while she maybe working or maybe going to look for work. So the government, in a way, assists her to pay for the care of that particular child. So when she turns 18, then a full service grant will apply to that child.
Thank you very much. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. I must say that, you know, one is a little bit concerned about, you know, the awareness program that we have, but I think it further needs improvement. Because, you know, to raise awareness on the person's disability is not like raising awareness to any other normal person. That is why you'll find that, especially in the rural areas, when we went on our oversight, we came across a group of women who were looking after their disabled children. And you could see these women are struggling. So what I'm trying to say is that I think we should really try and focus, you know, more focus on rural areas. But again, you know, it's really disappointing when government cuts its budget. It will be solely targeting, you know, this, you know, vulnerable groups.
persons with disabilities more than any other, you know, groups. So I don't think it's fair, really. And we need to raise that, that whenever the budget is cut, it targets, you know, persons with disabilities or social workers, like you said, you know, it's cut the budget of social workers and there's an outcry, you know, for social workers services. In that note, do you still have ghosts?
Yeah, well, I think the Social Security with the new registration process, they continuously address that. I'm sure we cannot completely get rid of that. There has been a great, you know, reduction in terms of those. I think SASA has announced that. But I'm sure it's a problem that we will continue to get. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank the honorable members, but just to emphasize one issue which Mantiti mentioned, that the issue of the disability is not the sole responsibility of Department of Social Development. I think she indicated the capacity building that we are doing as a department to senior managers. We're starting within the department itself. We'll be moving to other departments. Honorable Chair, if I can indicate some of these issues, are there in the policies which other departments or other stakeholders need to implement? But if they don't do that, I think we will still find ourselves in a similar situation. Just to make a classic example, as we were coming in here, when she was looking for a toilet, she went that other side, and there was a toilet for, there was no toilet for people with disabilities. The challenge is, if the manager here does not understand and take responsibility of those issues, I think we will still remain, you know, not only on the issue of accessibility, but on a number of other issues regarding. We have policies, I think we are exhausted with a number of policies, but these policies need to be implemented. And I'm sure with this, our honorable member will also assist the department in making sure that departments